Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by and welcome to the EIM Governing Body General Sessions. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question and answer session. Instructions will be given at that time. If you should require assistance during the call, please press star then zero. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to our host, Mr. Roger Kellington. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Members, let me go ahead and take roll call. Chair Howe.
Here.
Vice Chair Fong.
Here.
Member Linville.
Here.
Member Prescott.
Here.
And Member Schmidt.
Here.
Thank you. I'll turn it over to you, Chair Howe.
Thank you, Roger, and welcome everybody on the phone and here in the audience to our first meeting in Vancouver, British Columbia. As everyone, I think, knows who is here, we welcomed PowerX, the trading arm of associated with BC Hydro, into the EIM as of April 4th, and we're very happy that they and Idaho Power are now part of the energy imbalance market. And our presence here in Vancouver is to greet them into the energy imbalance market. We'll start off with any public comment and on the phone. There's no public comment in the room. Is there any public comment from anybody on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a public comment on the phone, please press star one. There is no public comment from the phone.
All right. Thank you very much. Roger, we'll turn it back to you for the decision on general session minutes.
Thank you, Doug. Need a motion for the general session minutes from March 8, 2018 to approve them.
So moved.
All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Excellent. Thank you.
Our next item is a update from the Regional Issues Forum, and we should have Cameron Yurkowski on by phone. Operator, can you tell us whether Mr. Yurkowski is available on the phone?
Mr. Yurkowski has not joined the call. He has just joined the call. Please go ahead, sir. Mr. Cameron Yurkowski has just joined the call as a speaker.
Hello, Cameron, if you're there.
Yes, Chair Howe. Hi, this is Cameron Yurkowski with the Regional Issues Forum.
Hello, Cameron.
I'm sorry for being late. Are we started?
Yes, we're in session, and please go ahead.
Well, thank you, Chair Howe and governing body members. Apology for the abrupt entrance there and for not being able to be up there in Vancouver, which I'm sure is lovely today. Wish I could be there with you in person. I appreciate the opportunity to give a brief update on the activities and upcoming meetings for the Regional Issues Forum. Our next meeting will be in Portland on June 6th, and it's worth calling attention to the fact that that's not a meeting that's adjacent to one of the governing body meetings, so we hope that people will make plans to attend and call into that meeting separately from the regularly scheduled governing body meetings. In terms of an agenda for that June 6th meeting, we're still putting that together currently and through the sector process on the Regional Issues Forum. We're taking input for items to include in that. One item that we have discussed and does seem to have a lot of support within the group for inclusion on the agenda is a discussion with about how some of the other markets do market power mitigation, and specifically the PJM market, having a speaker just give an informational presentation about other examples for how those types of issues can be handled within organized markets. But other than that, we're still discussing additional items for a full four-hour agenda on that day. And then following that meeting, our next meeting, we'll get back on schedule with you guys. We're targeting either before or after your November 29th governing body meeting would be the next RIF meeting following that. And then a couple items just in terms of RIF makeup that I'll mention sometime between that June 6th meeting and the next one. Therese Hampton with PGP will be taking over as the chair of the RIF. And we're currently in the process for selecting the new vice chair and secretary positions. We should have an announcement about that soon, but we should expect a orderly transition of power there. And Therese will make a great chair, and I know she'll look forward to coordinating with you all in the future. And we do have a liaison's call tomorrow to go over many of these items and solidify the agenda. So interested to know if there's any feedback on what I presented or questions for the liaisons that could bring that up tomorrow in a pretty timely manner. And other than that, open to questions. I think that's the update for the RIF. Thank you.
Thank you, Cameron. Are there any questions here in the audience for Cameron? No questions here in the audience. Are there any questions on the phone?
You have a question on the phone, press star 1. We have no questions on the phone.
Thank you, Cameron.
Thank you.
We'll turn now to the body. I'm sorry, recognizing Val Fong, Vice Chair.
Cameron, thank you very much for the updates. So I just kind of was wondering, so is this the last meeting where you're going to represent RIF? Is this possibly the last meeting where you're going to be representing RIF as the chair?
The last governing body meeting that I'll be representing the RIF as the chair, I think. That's unclear when we'll do the exact transition of power. I just know that it'll happen before our next RIF meeting.
Well, I know for myself, and I'm sure my fellow governing board, sister governing board members will agree, that we are very grateful for all that you've done really appreciate certainly the agendas for the RIF that you have been putting together. And thank you for all of your efforts.
Yes, I would say the same thing. Thank you very much, Cameron, for all your effort. It's been great to get to know you better through this leadership opportunity, and we appreciate your leadership in RIF.
Thank you. This feeling is mutual, and I'll look forward to continuing to working with the governing body as just a regular liaison in the audience.
Thank you very much, Cameron. We'll look forward to continuing to work with you. Next, we have Body of State Regulators update from Commissioner Jordan White of Utah. Is Commissioner White on the phone?
Yeah, hi, Chair Howe. I've just got a few brief updates. First of all, by way of our most recent meeting up in Vancouver last week, we had an excellent in-person meeting with presentations from PowerX, Idaho Power, and also ISO staff. And I know it is a gorgeous city. I actually wish I was still up there. In terms of upcoming meetings, our next the third quarter meeting will be held via telephone conference on July 19th at 3 p.m. Information on dial-in, I'm assuming, will go out to the BOSR and will likely also be available on the WEEB website. The next in-person meeting will be held on October 24th in Mesa, Arizona, to coincide with the joint CREPC-YRAB meeting. In terms of agenda items, we're still developing those, and I think our primary focus, among other things, will be the newest, latest proposals on GHG tracking and also the kind of the rollout of day-ahead market enhancements with respect to EIM participants. But other than that, that's all the updates I have for now. I'm open to questions if anyone has any.
Any questions in the audience for Commissioner White? No questions in the audience. Are there questions on the phone?
If there's questions on the phone, please star one. We have no questions from the phone lines.
Thank you very much, Commissioner White.
Thank you.
Our next item is an update on the EIM nominating committee process. Peter Colucci of the California ISO.
Thank you, Chair Howe, and the rest of the EIM governing body. I appreciate the opportunity to provide this update for you today. So I'm going to be providing just an update on the process of the nominating committee, kind of give you background on where we're at, and be able to answer any questions anyone has in the room. Right now, the nominating committee consists of representatives from different stakeholder sectors or groups as outlined in the selection policy. I went ahead and listed them all here. There are eight different members. Five of them are actually voting members. Those are going to be the EIM entities, the participating transmission owners, publicly owned utilities, marketers of generation, and the body of state regulators. However, I didn't call them out separately, but the EIM governing body, the ISO Board of Governors, and the public interest sector technically have non-voting seats. But I would like to highlight for this group that in this effort, they really search for a lot of consensus decision-making ability. So even though those last three technically don't have any voting privileges, their input is very highly valued and contributes greatly to the process that we're looking at as we evaluate the different candidates. The nominee selection for the EIM governing body is underway. As a reminder, the initial governing body was established, and we did some staggered terms to make sure that we didn't have too many people leaving all at the same time. And this year is one of the first times that we have two of those initial terms that are coming to an end. That would be Chair Howe and Member Linville. And for the selection policy, the EIM Governing Body Nominating Committee is working with an executive search firm to conduct a nationwide search for adequate candidates that fulfill a lot of the criteria that the group has established. I would like to also state in this space that we are evaluating the incumbent member Linville as well. Member Howe has let us know that he is no longer seeking reappointment at this time. So right now the nominating committee is narrowing the list of candidates to review. The executive search firm did publish the long list of candidates, distributed that to the sector liaisons last week. They'll be having another call on this next week to go through to shortlist the candidates, kind of put them in order of priority, and look to schedule some interviews. All of these candidates that they're looking at right now, we want to make sure that they have really great, valuable, relevant experience in the electric field, that they have some great knowledge of the Western interconnection, and much like the rest of everyone else at the ISO and on the governing body and ISO board, they are independent of all the market participants in the EIM. We are looking forward to scheduling these interviews in person. They're going to be held May 10th and 11th in the Phoenix area. And just from an order of process, after the nominating committee does conduct those interviews, they'll be putting together a slate of candidates, so that'll be the slate of two, that will be submitted to the EIM governing body for approval, and that is currently scheduled to take place on June 20th. The terms of those the terms for the members are going to be a three-year period. Those terms start on July 1st and expire on June 30th. There currently is a three-term maximum that we have established for each one of those different members. But we should hopefully have this information ready to present for you about a week ahead of time. We'll have that all published for the open meeting guidelines that we have here for you. The nominating committee has set to hopefully have their decision completed before the end of May. Is there any questions that I can answer for anything?
Any questions in the audience for Mr. Colucci?
Well, I do have a question.
Okay.
Not quite from the audience, but still from here. Peter, can you remind me, is it that the nominating committee will be posting? When will they post the slate of candidates is my question. Is that when they get down to the final recommended candidates?
two names per slot, or will it be posted when they have the nominating committee finally decides on who they want to recommend on the final slate?
That'll actually just be when they have decided on the slate. They'll work through the short list after the call next week to identify just maybe four or five candidates that they'd like to interview at that in-person opportunity, and then they will have that wrapped up before the end of May, but we won't post those until a week before the governing body meeting.
Great. Thank you very much.
Are there any questions on the phone?
Star one, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question on the phone. There are no questions from the phone line.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Clusi, for the update. Item 6 on the agenda was to be a briefing on the Western Energy Imbalance Market benefits, and we have learned that those are not quite ready. They need a little bit more time to analyze that, and that will be taken up then at the next scheduled general session of the governing body on July 12th, I believe is the date. The seventh item is briefing on policy outlook, Brant Cooper.
Thank you, Chair Howe and governing body members. This is the briefing on the policy outlook, where I'm going to review the status of our policy stakeholder initiatives. First, I'll go over the EIM-focused initiatives, then I'll go over the EIM-related initiatives, then finally I'll give you a summary of the non-EIM-related initiatives. And I should add that this update we do once a quarter to keep you apprised of what we have going on as far as policy development. The first EIM-focused policy stakeholder initiative is our EIM greenhouse gas initiatives. This is developing an enhanced methodology to assigning greenhouse gas obligations for EIM transfers serving ISO load. It addresses what's been termed the secondary dispatch. That's the effect of the EIM market dispatching up out of state, out of California resources to make up for the output that's serving as an EIM transfer into California. We've been working with the California Air Resources Control Board or coordinating with them to develop our proposal. We're going to post the third revised draft final proposal very soon. I think that's tomorrow. Then the plan is to bring it to the June EIM governing body meeting and then the July ISO board meetings, and this will be under your primary approval role as it's primarily affects the EIM market. The next EIM-focused policy stakeholder initiative is the EIM offer rule. We haven't completely scoped this initiative first. When we were working on the policy roadmap for this year, EIM participants brought up issues with the default energy bid as it relates to out-of-California participants that are participating in the EIM. And they've also, as you've seen in various presentations, they've also been advocating for resource efficiency test improvements. So what we're planning to do is to have a kickoff workshop to start off this initiative. Then once we more fully understand the concerns and the issues, we can decide how we're going to address them in a stakeholder policy initiative. Some of the issues might be things that we can address through, for example, business process manual changes that might not necessarily require a policy initiative. So that workshop is coming up very soon. We don't have a schedule yet, but we'll develop that after the workshop once we understand the scope. And then similarly, the EM governing body role is yet to be determined because we don't know exactly the nature of the issues, but given the issues, I'm confident that you'll have a role in approving whatever comes out of that. Next EIM-related policy stakeholder initiative is our day-ahead market enhancements initiative, where we're looking at substantial changes to our day-ahead market that are largely driven by the need to better position the day-ahead market to address renewable energy variation. We're looking at converting the day-ahead market's schedule granularity from one-hour granularity to 15-minute granularity. And then similarly, we would be changing EIM-based schedules to 15-minute granularity to be consistent with the day-ahead market. This initiative is also looking at combining the integrated forward market and the residual unit commitment process. The integrated forward market is the energy market part of the day-ahead market. The residual unit commitment process is a process that runs after that to dispatch additional supply to meet forecast demand as opposed to the demand that, or as opposed to the supply that clears the integrated forward market, which is based on clearing against demand bids. We're working on the policy to develop that into a, or to combine that into a single optimization. And the existing residual unit commitment process awards would be converted into what we're calling imbalance reserve. The difference would be imbalance reserve also will address reserve for downward dispatchability in addition to only the upward dispatchability we currently have. And this is all intended to further address integrating variable energy resources into the grid. This initiative will then serve as the base and will be then followed by the initiative to look at extending the day-ahead market to EIM entities, which will start later on this year. The status of this is that we've posted a revised straw proposal, and we're planning to bring this to the August EIM governing body meeting and then the September ISO board meeting. And we're proposing that this fall under the hybrid non-EIM specific EIM governing body approval rule. It's hybrid because it contains the changes to the 15-minute granularity, which affects EIM, and then the remainder of this initiative is much broader. Another initiative that's related to the EIM, because it affects a market model that can be used in the EIM, is our Energy Storage and Distributed Energy Resources Phase 3 initiative, otherwise called ESDR Phase 3. This is an ongoing initiative. As you can see, it's the third phase to look at improvements to our energy storage and distributed energy resource model. This year, we're looking at various demand response product refinements, multi-use application market rule refinements. Multi-use applications are distributed energy resources that can participate in both the retail side and in the wholesale market. And then finally, we're looking at further refinements to our non-generator resource model. The non-generator resource model is a model we use to model resources such as batteries that can move slowly from charge to discharge, as well as it's used to model PowerX's participation in the EIN. We're posting a revised straw proposal shortly, and then the schedule is to bring this to the August EIM governing body meeting and the September ISO board meetings. Because this affects general real-time market rules, we're proposing that the EIM governing body have an advisory role in this initiative. Next initiative, and this is a policy initiative light. We believe the changes that come out of this fit with existing policy, so we're planning to brief the EIM governing body and the ISO board. This initiative is clarifying the existing tariff rules regarding following dispatch operating target, or in other words, clarifying the rules for supply resources to follow their market dispatch. And it also includes clarifying when variable energy resources must curtail output as opposed to just generating based on their energy source. We've posted draft tariff language. We're working on responses to stakeholder comments, and then we'll be coming up with revised tariff language. And then, as I said earlier, we plan to brief you at your July meeting and then the ISO board at its July meeting. Moving to the non-EIM related policy stakeholder initiatives, we're currently working on the rate design terms and condition for reliability coordinator services. So I'm sure you've heard the ISO is no longer going to use peak reliability for grid reliability services. We intend to become a reliability coordinator and offer reliability services to other balancing areas. And currently, we're working on a stakeholder process to develop the rate design terms and conditions with a mid-year 2019 expected operations date. We plan to post the draft final proposal on May 24th. And then this would go to either the June or July ISO board meeting for approval. And then finally, this slide lists the non-EIM related policy stakeholder initiatives we have ongoing, and I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about those as well. And that concludes my presentation.
Other questions from the governing body members? Recognizing Member Schmidt.
So first of all, Brad, thank you so much for pulling this together. And one thing that I really enjoy about these updates is we really get a sense of what's on the horizon, but also what's new. And we continue to see that the policy team is taking a very conservative approach on the classification, which I continue to agree with. So I note the EIM offer rules is a new initiative that's coming in, and while on its face of what we have presented here, it seems like probably going to be primary, but you know, you're going to wait and see until the workshop and what the ultimate proposal is, and I really appreciate that. So then when we get to the EDAM, the day-ahead market enhancements in particular, I just want to make sure that I understand this one because, from the little bit of reading I've done so far, this is going to be the first time we have a hybrid non-EIM-specific issue that comes before us. Mm-hmm. And if memory serves me correctly, the non-EIM-specific policy initiative, there are components in the initiative that will come to the EIM governing body first for our vote. And if we approve it, it goes on to the Board of Governors for their deliberation and vote. But if it comes to the EIM governing body for a vote and we request changes, those changes would have to be made by the ISO staff to come back to us for another vote before it goes to the Board of Governors. So I just want to make sure that I understand and I've got that process locked in my head on this. Did I get that right, Brad?
Yes, I think so. This is... we're proposing that it's a hybrid because it includes EIM 15-minute base schedules, and we don't consider that severable from the rest of the proposal. So if you happen to have rejected that, then we would have to go back and rework the proposal because it likely wouldn't work with just removing that part. That's different than a lot of the other initiatives that we brought to you where we've considered things severable. So you had primary over one portion, and then the other, or the remainder, you had a advisory role.
Great. Well, I just really appreciate, again, all the work that you all have done on this, and I know that this is one that you all have evaluated extensively, and this is a change in classification, and appreciate the evolution and the continued thinking that you are all putting into those classifications, so thank you.
Sure.
Recognizing Member Fong.
Thank you very much, Chair Howe. In terms of the non-EIM related policy stakeholder initiatives, I'm just a little bit curious. There's an item here, review transmission access charge structure, and I'm wondering if at this time this change, were there any to be proposed in the transmission access charge structure, something that current EIM participants should pay some attention to, because there's a potential for the TAC to be somehow implemented during an expansion of the day-ahead market to the EIM?
Potentially. This is looking at the format or structure of the transmission access charge for the ISO balancing area. And, potentially then that could be a precedent for transmission access charge for the extended day-ahead market, though the structure of that is a little bit different, but they could be related.
Dr. Casey?
I think at this point, because, you know, we haven't even started a stakeholder policy initiative on extending the day-ahead market to EIM, it's really difficult to say, you know, what exactly will come out of that in the way of how we'll get transmission costs. So, you know, this initiative right now is just focused on the ISO footprint and how the TAC charge is implemented. So it really is specific to ISO at this point. But there's no question when we get into the extending the day-ahead market to EIM, transmission cost allocation is going to be front and center in that, and there's no question the EIM governing body will have a role in that.
Thank you. Are there any other questions from the members?
Chair Howe, if I might, this is kind of an updated piece of information, but with regard to the GHG enhancements in the EIM, I think based on your direction, we'll be looking to bring that to the EIM governing body in July as opposed to June, as it was shown in the presentation. So that's a new update we'll incorporate into the schedule.
Thank you. Thank you for making that clarification. Yes, we did ask you to defer that for 1 month to July. Any other questions from members? Or are there questions from the audience? Or are there questions on the phone?
Ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question on the phone, press star 1. There are no questions from the phone.
Thank you very much, Brad, and don't go anywhere because the next item is for you also. You're going to brief us on the imbalance conformance enhancement proposal.
And if I may, Chair Howe, this is Keith Casey. I'll just introduce this and turn it over to Brad. So on this item, we're seeking your approval to authorize the use of the imbalance conformance by EIM balancing areas. And also, under your advisory role, seeking your support for the proposed enhancements to the conformance limiter and the tariff clarifications authorizing the use of the imbalance conformance limiter and imbalance conformance for the ISO balancing area. So before Brad begins, I wanted to recognize Megan Pogue, who's in the audience here. Megan was the lead on this policy initiative. She's a senior market design policy developer here at the ISO. And I also wanted to recognize, who's not here, Guillermo Bautista, who works in Mark's group and led a lot of the technical analysis and also was kind of the brainchild behind the enhancements we're making to the limiter. So with that, I'll turn it over to Brad.
Thanks, Keith. So I'm going to be describing a couple of proposals related to imbalance conformance. And what imbalance conformances are adjustments that system operators make to the load forecast that's input into the ISO market. Now, we're not calling them load adjustments because the imbalance conformances are actually made for a couple reasons. And the reason they adjust the load forecast is the market is the real-time market is dispatching supply to match load. So by adjusting the load forecast, the operators can get an appropriate amount of imbalance energy dispatched in the market. They're trying to adjust the imbalance energy dispatched to the market for it could be for load forecast error, but a lot of times it's for supply deviations, whether it's a generators deviating from their dispatch or renewable energy forecast error or intertie schedules that aren't being delivered as schedules or outages of generators. So they use this load adjustment or imbalance conformances to get the market to dispatch an appropriate amount of energy. So we've separated this proposal for decisional purposes. Under your primary role, we're asking you to authorize tariff changes explicitly authorizing imbalance conformance by EIM balancing areas. And then we're also asking you to consider giving input to the ISO board under your advisory role for tariff changes authorizing imbalance conformance by the ISO balancing area. Also, the tariff change allowing use of the conformance limiter in the real-time market, and then our proposed enhancements to the imbalance conformance limiter that I'll go over in just a minute. And virtually all the stakeholders support this decisional classification. Okay, the imbalance conformance limiter, it mitigates the impact of market operator imbalance conformances on market prices. If the market tries to dispatch more supply than is available, it will set prices at $1,000 a megawatt hour if there's a supply shortage, or conversely, it'll set prices at -$150 if there's excess supply. And the reason we have the limiter is that the operator imbalance conformance are typically what we're terming here course adjustments. And what I mean by that is the operator is inputting adjustments that the operator doesn't necessarily need in the first interval, but is trying to get the market to respond to over several intervals. So, for example, the area control error or the frequency of a balancing area might be off, and the operator has, I think it's 30 minutes to return it. The operator would put in a balance conformance and doesn't necessarily need that energy in the first interval, but needs it over a number of intervals. So if the operator happens to put in a bigger adjustment than there is supply available, it could trigger pricing at these relaxation parameters when there really is no real scarcity or oversupply. The imbalance conformance limiter works to avoid these or this pricing at relaxation parameter prices by limiting the adjustments just to the available energy bid quantity. And so if you think about it, if the operator is making an adjustment like I described, the operator would choose to just make the adjustment for the what's available to the operator. And then this results in the pricing being based on the highest priced energy bid and I guess if it's we're talking oversupply or at the lowest priced energy bid rather than at the relaxation parameter prices. So this diagram illustrates the concept, and it also illustrates the changes we're proposing for the imbalance conformance limiter. The previous limiter was just based on looking at the amount of conformance related to the infeasibility, and whenever the conformance was greater than the infeasibility, then it was triggered. The improved conformance limiter is just is looking at the changes to the operator adjustments. So I'm showing a number of intervals here. The green line is the operator desired resource ramp. The blue bars are the operator input. So the operator needs some energy to be ramped in over a number of intervals, and this, you know, in interval 5. And so for interval 2, the operator turns up the dial and puts in a conformance input. And then in this example, that results in a bigger adjustment than available supply, so that results in an infeasibility, which is shown by the yellow bars. The infeasibility is decreasing as the available generation is available to ramp up. So the improved conformance limiter would trigger in the intervals with the blue stars on top based on the change the operator put into interval 2. And then there's logic in the limiter that lets the limiter recognize that interval 3 and 4, the infeasibilities are also a result of that operator adjustment. Now, the difference between this new limiter and the old limiter is shown by interval 5. So in the old limiter, interval 5 would trigger because it's just looking one interval at a time. And looking at this, if an infeasibility happened to arise in interval 5 in this example, it's not due to that operator adjustment. So in that case, it would be legitimate to have pricing based on the relaxation parameters. That would be true scarcity conditions. So we're proposing to clarify the tariff language authorizing the ISO and EIM balancing areas to perform imbalance conformances. We think it's allowable under the current tariff. The current tariff gives us discretion to create a load forecast that deems appropriate to make grid reliability. But in the interest of transparency, we feel it's appropriate to put it explicitly in the tariff. Similarly, in the interest of transparency, we think it's appropriate to authorize the use of the imbalance conformance limiter. And all stakeholders support these tariff clarifications. Stakeholders generally support our imbalance conformance enhancements, but with some enhancements. SCE, or Southern California Edison, they maintain we should put in the revised limiter logic, but put it in on top of the existing limiter logic. Their logic is it's better to avoid scarcity prices any time an operator adjustment is involved. We don't agree with that. We believe it's appropriate to only not reflect scarcity prices in instances that aren't driven by the operator course adjustments, and that our proposed enhancements provide improved pricing. PowerX maintains the imbalance conformance limiter will suppress valid scarcity prices. We disagree with that. We believe the conformance limiter is targeted at the operator course adjustments. While, you know, in a small percentage of the time, that might correspond to valid scarcity. The vast majority of the time, it's just the operator course adjustments driving the pricing at the administrative prices. But recognizing that concern, we've committed to stakeholders to remove the limiter in approximately 2 years. This will give us time to make operational tool enhancements that will reduce the operator's need to make these course adjustments. And then once we have that in place, then we agree it's appropriate to remove the conformance limiter to not suppress valid scarcity prices. So we recommend the EIM governing body approve authorization of the balance conformance by EIM balancing areas. These tariff changes are supported by stakeholders and approved transparency. And we also recommend the EIM governing body support proposed limiter enhancements and tariff clarifications through your advisory role. The balance conformance enhancements will enable the trigger to will enable the limiter to trigger more appropriately, and the tariff changes improve transparency by authorizing use of the limiter and imbalance conformance by the ISO BA. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions from members? Member Prescott.
Thanks, Brad. I appreciate this report. A couple of things. One is I want to commend the stakeholders that commented on this throughout the process, and I know that helped to get the classification for the decision changed. So thank you for that and for everybody that actually took the time to put in comments. And then specifically looking at the comments of Southern California Edison and PowerX, kind of opposing comments, and it looks like the solution to that staff did was come up with this two-year horizon to eliminate the limiter, if I'm correct in that, and which may be okay. I guess I'm curious on a couple things. One is that, you know, if why wouldn't you eliminate it now? And the second part of that is, would there be a circumstance where even though you committed to eliminate the limiter, that you'd have to keep it in place? I mean, could things play out that you'd have to back up on that commitment?
Yeah, we don't think it's appropriate just to limit it now because the vast majority of the time these imbalance conformances are the situation I described where they're the relatively coarse adjustments where the operators are trying to ramp in resources for future intervals. And so limiting it now would drive scarcity pricing in intervals when there isn't actually scarcity pricing. We've made a pretty strong commitment to develop these operational tools that enable us to get rid of the limiter. And so long as we're able to develop those operational tools, which we don't see any issues with doing so, we think then it will be appropriate to remove the limiter after we get those tools in place in about 2 years.
Okay, thanks.
This is Mark Rothbard. If I could just add to that. So those operational tools are intended to better inform the operator of what the needs are of the system, if there is any need for adjustment, and what the capability of the system is. So they're better informed so they can refine what is now course adjustments. In addition, we're looking to potentially automate some of those things that conditions that lead to the need for making these conforming adjustments. And if we're successful in both those manners, we believe that at the end of the 2 years, the need for the limiter would no longer be there because the course adjustments would go away.
Any other questions from members? Member Lindell?
Not exactly a question, but so this makes sense to me that you know, to be judicious about implementing the move towards the better reflection of scarcity pricing, but ultimately to have that as the goal. So if I understand your proposal right, these limiters will give you time to put the tools in place, as Mark just described, that will allow you to ensure or differentiate, you know, more clearly those conditions of true scarcity versus those conditions that are induced by operator adjustment. So I think it's appropriate to allow time for those that additional information and visibility to the operator to be developed. But I also like the fact that there, ultimately this is a move towards reflecting scarcity pricing, and I think that's a very positive move. So I like your proposal. Thanks.
Thank you.
Other members? I have one question for you, Brad. I'm assuming because Mr. Hildebrand isn't here that Department of Market Monitoring supports this. Can you just confirm for me that they do?
Yes, they support this and have actually advocated for these limiter enhancements a number of times, noting that it would more appropriately trigger the limiter.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions from the audience, or are there questions on the phone?
Star one, ladies and gentlemen, if you have a question on the phone. There are no questions from the phone lines.
Thank you very much, Mr. Cooper. We'll move now, Roger, to the vote.
Thank you, Chair Howe. Move that the EIM governing body approves the tariff clarifications authorizing EIM balancing areas to make imbalance conformance adjustments for their balancing area as described in the memorandum dated April 17, 2018, including any revisions that implement the overarching enhancements but contain discrete revisions to incorporate Federal Energy Regulatory Commission guidance in any initial ruling on the proposed tariff amendment.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you.
We'll move on to the advisory item now, please.
Okay. Did you...
Did I skip a step?
Well, didn't skip a step, but if we do need a little bit of guidance from the body as to
its desires on this. Can I just make a proposal here? Just to clean this up because we don't have to do the 1-2-3s here.
Right.
But I think it is important that we continue to provide the verbal update to the Board of Governors on anything that is advisory. So I would like us to see in this particular one a verbal advisory supporting the proposal as presented today. That would be my recommendation. If anybody else has any other suggestions.
And I'm happy to provide a motion to that effect.
Just a minute. Are there any other questions from comments from the governing body?
I think it's also helpful to do a brief written update frankly, to guide some of the verbal comments that someone might have to make, which could be me. So I would propose that we sort of do a two-pronged mechanism because we are not just advisory, but there is a primary role for us.
I agree with Vice Chair Fong. I do think it's important, as Member Schmidt said, that we present in person so that we can answer questions. But having been in this position a number of times already, having written comments helps focus the mind on what exactly you want to say. It also provides an opportunity for all members to see what is being said by. In this case, I think the vice chair will, in fact, be giving that to the board of governors. So I think our motion probably should say provide verbal and written advisory input, and then we can proceed to the motion.
Excellent. Move that the EIM governing body will provide verbal and written advisory input to the Board of Governors as discussed at its April 24, 2018 general session meeting, supporting management's proposal on imbalance conformance, limiter enhancements, and associated tariff changes.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Thank you. Motion passed.
Thank you, Mr. Cooper. Thank you, Megan, for the work that you've done on this. And thank you, Roger, for taking us through that. That brings us nearly to the end of our meeting here. We have a set of standing items, informational reports, and seeing no questions, I'm looking at comments from the members. I will just reiterate what Dr. Casey said, which is the GHG enhancements item will be moving to the July 2018 meeting at this point, pending any future changes that may come down the path. With that, are there any future agenda items that we have? Seeing none, the meeting's adjourned. Thank you very much.